Hello, Master Your Money listeners. Welcome to today's episode. I am so excited for today. I have my very good friend, Amelia Nathanson, back with us. Welcome, Amelia, again.
Thank you so much.
So great to have you. Last time you were on the show, we were talking about more so your role as the vice president of operations here at the firm, and you were giving us really great advice on how to maximize our medical for life insurance underwriting, yep. Which was a great episode. But today, because we are moving, you know, I don't know if you noticed, but we changed the format of the show to Master Your Money and Mindset.
And I love it. Two themes I am super passionate about. So
beautiful. So because of that, we are focusing more on not how to just manage your wealth and how to maximize your wealth, but also how do you acquire wealth? How do you accumulate wealth? What does your thought process have to be as you start to earn money? And that topic is really important to me because as I am raising my own children, it's just a thought that goes through my head all the time is how do I prepare them for the working world? And how do I prepare them to be good, responsible, contributing adults to our society? But that made me think of you because you happen to, in another life, you, Amelia, dedicates a very decent amount of time working with young professionals. And you have spent the past 8 years and counting, you still work with college-age students and young professionals to prepare them for the working world. So I wanted to have you on today, Amelia, so we could just have a really fun conversation. Sure. And you could help teach our listeners about what you see out there, what us parents should be doing differently, what we should be thinking about. You also have experience from an HR standpoint, right? So you have also interviewed and hired and resume prepped these folks.
Sure.
So you are just a wealth of knowledge in this space. So calling parents of children who are going to be sending their kids out into the working world, listen to what Amelia has to say, because she's going to help make sure they get hired, but also that they know how to manage their she's crossing her fingers.
Fingers crossed.
Also that they know how to manage their money afterwards.
Yes, absolutely.
So Amelia, again, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Super excited to be here. Obviously love talking about everything that falls into that life insurance and operational investment space, but this is a topic I'm super passionate about. And so I hope I can share with the parents listening, as well as those college age students maybe out there looking for their first role, second role, transitioning. It's a lot. And it's a lot of different career stages that I've counseled on and have input on, I guess, for lack of better words.
It is a lot. And I don't think we realize how much it is and maybe how different it is from when you and I first got a job.
Sure.
Right. Not giving away our ages, but we were in our 20s a long time ago. And it was very different back then.
Absolutely.
You know, I remember I wasn't happy at a job. My parents were like, well, what do you mean you're not happy? Like, who cares if you're not happy? Do they pay you? And I'm like, yeah. Do you get a benefit? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, it doesn't matter then. You have everything you need
right.
in this life right now. And the thought process is just really different.
Totally. One of the major themes, and I'm sure we'll talk more about it, is this whole concept of non-negotiables, like identifying what will make you not even happy, right? Content, fulfilled in the workplace. And old school mentality is that money was the only driver of that. Certainly money solves the money problems, but it doesn't solve all problems.
Yeah.
And especially that's thematically what I see. So I guess I'll start a little bit about how I got into this
Please.
Space. Mm-hmm. I was fortunate enough, had an extremely, extremely great college career myself and worked in student life and student development when I was getting my MBA. Mm-hmm. So I worked with Greek life leadership, developed really a passion in that subset, thought that I might even go into higher ed as opposed to using like my MBA and my finance degree and all that good stuff. I actually looked for my first job in both spots. So I don't know if you know that.
No. What was your major?
So my major undergrad was finance.
Okay.
And we'll actually talk about that too. So
That's funny. I don't think I knew that.
Yeah. So I changed my major 3 times.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. Statistically speaking, if you change your major once, you will change it 3 times. So for all you college age students that might be listening, that is not something that is uncommon, right? And for parents listening, if your kid comes home and says, I don't want to do journalism anymore, I'm moving to business, right? It might not be something to be angry about or,
okay,
or
so
really,
let them.
Yeah. So I ended up moving into the financial services space. I had done a couple of internships there. And so that just naturally was the career trajectory that I went on. Okay. But I always knew I would have this like sort of sweet spot for it.
Did you go into finance because that was kind of the first thing that came along and you just need, you know, you got the job and you needed it and you just wanted to get moving, or did something inside you say you wanted to go in that direction?
So interestingly enough, it's actually a little deeper than that. I moved to business first and then had to declare a major, and I was a good student and thought finance would make me the most money. I was in the New York City area. I was living in Queens. Mm-hmm. So that was obviously, you know, and again, I don't want to use too many years, but a good time for banks and investment institutions, hedge funds. So there was a lot of opportunity there. So I essentially declared a major in light of those opportunities. And then once I was getting my MBA, realized like, I'm probably not going to go into financial analytics or anything like that. I'm just too much of a people person, if you will, which is another
thing. Sure are.
Well, it's another thing that I talk to my students about, right? It's not just what your major is or what you're good at. You have to have an interest for it. You have to have a passion. You have to have a vision. You have to have a calling. There are lots of different components to that piece.
And I love that because it's, and I went to a business school as well. And so much of the focus was on like hardcore business, like the hard business skills versus the soft skills. And I remember feeling pressure to go into an analyst position or something that's just
totally
one of the bigger accounting firms. And you didn't feel like a success if you didn't go in those directions. So I think students watching out so they're not a product of their environment, but they're doing what feels right to them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So first job was really in, again, directly financial services. I was supporting a financial services advisor and was fortunate enough to transition to Barnum and honestly into a role that was essentially created for me, which combined, you know, the industry that I had experience in, but also HR interviewing, career fairs. Mm-hmm. So meeting and interacting with college students on that level. Awesome, obviously, opportunity. Transitioned into training. So that was getting me more face time in front of large groups. I had always been very confident in front of large groups, but that really took it over the edge. And so fortunately, you know, here I was given an opportunity at a local university with a developing program. They had a real emphasis on career development in addition to whatever your academic programming was. And they were doing this 1.5 hour a week, 1 credit course in career planning at the time. And you were given the content, but you can kind of do with it what you wanted. And I was like,
I got
this
it.
Is like a paid hobby, my friends. Yeah. Like this was really created for me. And so it's been an 8-year journey. I've actually taught some semblance of that class at multiple institutions, because a lot of institutions and even public university spaces are really leaning towards that as either part of their business programs, part of their programs overall, with a real usual focus on financial planning, personal financial planning, that is budgeting as it ties into the career planning cycle.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think that shift over the past, you know, however many years?
That's a great question. There is definitely a gap that universities, thank God, are noticing in what employers are looking for in the soft skill space.
Love it.
It is still a major gap.
It is.
I will tell you from the students that I see as juniors and seniors going on interviews that there's just this widespread gap, even within the classroom.
And that class, is that what your students are you teaching?
So typically I'm teaching juniors and sometimes seniors, depending on
helping them plan.
Yeah, for sure. For some, you know, it's interesting. I always start every semester with, listen, you can do this class for a grade or you can do it for your life. Mm. If you do it for your life,
great
you're going to get a good.
Great point, professor. Great point.
If you're going to do it for your life, you're going to get a good grade. If you do it for the grade, you'll do just fine. You know, it's not a class that's going to hold back anybody's GPA, fully. Yep. Right.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting to see the different universities over this 8-year journey. You know, I keep myself out there to kind of see what's what and what will work with mm-hmm. my day life schedule. But different institutions really adding it or adding a spin on it. Mm-hmm. Right. And you know, just in the research and also the co-faculty that I have, a lot of high schools are now adding it as a module, if you will.
Yes.
Maybe not for credit or full credit, but, yes. you know, part semester, which I think is fantastic. Because the one thing I've noticed is if you don't force the hand at it, create a track to run on for each of the pieces that are really necessary. So just basic things like resume, cover letter. You know, now we have this whole idea that your resume needs to also exist in a space that can be picked up by AI yes. and by applicant tracking systems.
So you have the students to come to you asking for the curriculum.
Right.
Asking for the information.
Literally. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely been something where it gives me a great sense of fulfillment. You know, you can't touch every student, but you can't impact each and every one. But the ones that you have, the ones that come back still and mm-hmm. really take your work, you up on it. Like, mm-hmm. I will review your resume as many times as you want. Yeah. Like, it's a great break in my day to yeah. just like give you some feedback. Has been a wonderful sense of fulfillment, but there's a ton of work to be done in this space for sure.
That's what I'm really, really curious about is tell us, and in addition to everything you mentioned, you're so humble. You also lead an initiative here with Junior Achievement, making sure that we get involved in teaching personal finance to really, really littles, the K through high school.
Sure.
And also you just judged a competition, right? Oh, a career competition.
So that was with DECA. High school students across Connecticut. It's so fun, yeah. right? High school and college, very different. Very different. I don't know why those couple of formative years, uh-huh. junior in high school versus junior in college uh-huh. was like this weird kind of
yeah.
situation. But yes, entrepreneurial spirit there for
so
sure.
So nice.
Yeah, it was great. I really do. I have such this passion for young people and the awareness that comes with it. And I think that's thematically where this dialogue goes to, right? So there seems to be just, and I haven't done a ton of research on what this looks like, but it could be the technology and the phones and the ability to disconnect. But the major theme of what lacks in that age period is self-awareness. There just is not this sense that I'm looking at myself through a lens of how I impact others. I maybe have not even gotten to a level where I can see myself through my own lens. And I think that's just because the generation entering the workforce now is just overstimulated. There's just constant entertainment, like literally at their fingertips. And so there's not really any time unless you dedicate or someone makes you aware that you should take some proactive time to do that introspection. Yeah. And so a lot of what I do teach is like, hey, we're going to spend 45 minutes. I'm going to force you to write things down about yourself in these, yeah. you know, various categories to get that, you know, that ball rolling.
When you do an exercise like that, do they appreciate it? Are they able to write things down? Or is even just that exercise a struggle?
It depends. There's definitely a group usually that is very like, this is not for me. And whether mm-hmm. that's gender-based or generational-based, mm-hmm. I do have an opportunity at one institution I teach at to teach a lot of non-traditional students. So a lot of times they're more game mm-hmm. than your, you know, 20, 21-year-old mm-hmm. who's like, all right, what's this lady, mm-hmm. you know, kind of saying. But it all depends. I typically teach a lot of athletes as well. So if you can connect their interest, right, in that yes. sport to a particular industry, or teach them that, hey, a job search isn't going on Indeed and just putting in accounting, right? You can actually go to the NBA, the NFL, ESPN up the street
yes.
and search jobs that might fit your interest level or companies or organizations you believe in, and kind of flip that job search on its head. A lot of times you can take that self-awareness inventory
yep.
and make something of it,
but
tactically.
But to your point, you have to know what those interests are. Essentially, you have to know what you want to do.
Right.
My daughter came to me and she goes, what do I like? And I was like, what do you mean? And she's like, I have to write down three things that I like. And I'm like, I don't know. What do you like? And it was a really good exercise in just what you're saying, self-awareness.
Yeah.
Just being self-aware of generally what do you enjoy doing aside from looking at a phone.
And besides that, like, hey, lady, I love you to death, but you got to figure that out on your own.
Yes.
Right? That's not something mom can answer for you.
Yeah.
Which is another piece I actually feel is getting a little bit better than when I first started teaching.
Which piece?
The parental involvement in what I am interested in, what I should major in. Mm-hmm. I'm emailing the college professor. Yeah. So I actually feel that there's been improvements in that area where I get less parent interaction.
Did you get parent interactions teaching?
Elizabeth.
College?
More than
No, you did not.
Yes. Oh, yes.
You did not.
Yes.
But you're seeing a shift there. You're seeing more student accountability.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Either that or just total just lack overall from both sides. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I'm just going to school because somebody told me I had to. Yeah.
I feel the same, more so in just friend groups or from what I'm reading. Now, I don't know if it's because the kids are older now. So you realize as your kids get older and become independent, you know, you can't helicopter for so long, right? At some point, you kind of have to let them go and make their own decisions, good or bad.
Right.
And I like to see them make their own decisions.
Absolutely.
I like to see them learn from them. Sometimes they're good and sometimes they're not great.
Absolutely.
But it's all a part of the learning.
Yeah. Yes, for sure.
And that's a fun part of being a parent.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I think as you're looking at this and taking the podcast in this direction, so mm-hmm. excited to hear about that. There's a lot of things fundamentally that you can be doing, even middle school, high school, to start prep what that really looks
Dying
like.
To know.
Yeah. So the first thing is that students do not know how to communicate. And I'll extrapolate that even further.
Please.
If you can't text it, they can't communicate it, whether that's verbally.
Not even in an email.
Email is like you're saying a prayer, right? That they can get that concept out to you. I mean, a greeting, right?
Give us an example of a communication. Is it like disputing a grade with you? Is it, I can't make this exam, can we reschedule? Like give us a little bit more.
It's amazing because a lot of institutions actually, which will shock you, it actually, when I first started teaching, annoyed me to no end. Like, how could this be? Due to their accreditation and probably different money that they get from various organizations, most institutions have implemented an attendance policy. So it's now up to the professor to actually take attendance, not like, hey, you pay for this.
Okay.
So
do it.
Whether
you
right.
Yeah.
So you can be excused if you email me in advance of the class, letting me know I don't feel well, I have family commitment, whatever. Mm-hmm. Then it's an excuse up and it's no harm, no foul.
Okay.
The number of emails that I get in the middle of the class when I would be teaching the class and not know looking why your you're there, that are just like, not even, hey, professor, hey, lady, anything like that. Just, you know, my roommate's been sick for 3 days and I don't want to get anyone sick. Like, see ya.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's actually not how you would call out of work, class, anything under the sun.
Yeah.
But it's just a simple example of like, it's like cringeworthy.
Yes.
Something as simple as I uploaded this assignment to the portal that we use. And I tell the student, hey, I couldn't open it. Could you just email it to me? I'll put the grade in right there. Just email it to me. And there's no attachment. Just the body of the email is the assignment. I mean, it's laughable, right? But it's not.
It's
because some of these things are just like baseline. No matter what industry you're going into, you're going to have to use email. Even if you're going into a trade, likely you will be attaching a quote or something to an email.
And I laugh, but it's not funny because doing that will have a negative effect. Like, if you did that to a client whose business you wanted, they may get annoyed and not give you the business. If you did that to a boss who was in a rush and was just looking to pass the file on, they would get annoyed and maybe have a conversation with you.
Yeah.
Like, there is an effect to those things that I don't think students and even some interns that I've worked with don't understand the effect of what that little action could be.
Yeah, absolutely. But I also think, don't get me on my soapbox about this topic, right?
Here or there.
There's a lack of feedback. you know, mm-hmm. we live sort of in a society where no one wants to make that person feel badly. Bad. So they're not going to say, hey, for next time, right? That should really not go in the body of an email. That should be an attachment. Do you need help creating that attachment? Like, there's no shame around what those nuances really look like, because no one is coming out and saying like, this belongs in a class. And maybe it doesn't belong in a class, sure. right? You're supposed to learn as you go. But again, sort of that baseline feedback, it's what employers say is missing. These communication skills, you know, both.
But let's stick on a communication for a second. And it's specifically feedback, because you're right. Let's assume maybe feedback isn't given enough. But in plenty of situations, feedback is given, but feedback goes both ways. So if the person receiving the feedback doesn't care or isn't listening,
right?
Or she's like, yeah, whatever, professor.
Yeah.
To read the email wherever you want to read it. In the attachment or in the body, I don't care. Just read it and give me my grade. You know, what good is the feedback?
Right.
And that's something that I notice as well, that you can give it all you want, but if the other person doesn't care to receive it, it's not going to go anywhere. Is that part of the communication?
I think it's that. It's also part of, again, thematically, what employers say is missing and what I see is missing is the level of emotional intelligence or emotional respect, right? So sometimes just making the students aware that this is an active part of what the work world looks like now.
Yeah.
Right. So if you study traditional management, right, you have charts and graphs and project management and all that good stuff. I've taught modules in management as well. Now you'll do entire units just on emotional intelligence.
Yes.
Just on the impacts of empathy in the work
of your own self-awareness.
Absolutely.
Whole courses just so you can get to know yourself and how you come across to people.
Absolutely.
One of my favorite ones. Oh.
You and I are
that's
like
our next episode.
Kindred spirits on that.
Episode is EQ.
Yeah. So, you know, mindset wise, there are lots of things. Again, in this space, you're not going to impact every single student, but you touch them all. So if they take one nugget away, like I've done the job that I need to do.
Do you think that universities or maybe it's career centers or maybe is it parents at home, like not giving enough attention to these softer skills? And again, not giving enough attention to the effects of them, like what the effect of not having this skill could look like in your professional life?
So that's a great question. That's an awesome question. And it's multifaceted. So I think at home, and my children are young, right? My children are in second grade. So as much as I try to impact them with the things that I know about self-assessment, self-awareness, and things I can pick up on, you're flying a million miles an hour. Not everything is a teachable moment, but just trying to be a little bit more aware as a parent, I think can be very impactful in helping to guide them.
Being aware of your child
and how different they are from you and how they might communicate differently than you. And just the fact that instinctively that exists, right? There are those natural just differences. Mm-hmm. I actually have twins, right? Mm-hmm. So just even the way they're developing and the way one needs to be coached, parented, reprimanded, you know, differently is different. So that piece. But extrapolating that out further to what universities, high schools are doing, it is not for lack of trying, but this is a problem that hasn't changed, or excuse me, a solution that hasn't, you know, come to be in the 20 years since I physically worked on the college campus as an administrator, right, till now. Colleges can't get students to use the Career Center enough to go to these programs or workshops with employers, you know, to actually physically see what employers are looking for. Yeah. You know, they very much, you know, they'll give free food. They'll give,
anything
to get them to come to these things. But there's always just something that's more important or perceived as more important, or I'd just rather have fun or, you know, whatever. And all that is a great part of the college experience too. But I think, again, it's not for lack of trying. I think universities really struggle with that side of their campuses, that student life, that higher ed piece, that outside of academia. Honestly, I encourage every single one of my students, I don't care what your interest is, join a club, join an organization. The socialization, the networking, I think the statistics, like 86% of jobs come from the people you know.
The people you know.
Not submitting to Indeed, it could be your dream job. And the person was in your class last semester and you just, you know, never had the opportunity.
Do you think it's that students are taking their college life sometimes too seriously? Or is it laziness?
That honestly,
I know that's a big question.
Well, it's a big question and it's got an interesting dynamic, right? So yes, I do see students who take the academic piece of it to, you know, the nth degree. Mm-hmm. And that might be actually holding them back from, well, I just do school, or I just do school and I need to work, which is a real reality
that's
for
true.
A lot
that's
of
a
students.
Reality, yeah.
You know, that I teach as well. And then you have the other subset that's there for the fun and hasn't learned the balance piece.
Yes.
Which is
They're teetering the scales one way or another.
Yeah. But that's another piece that if you haven't self-reflected as you move into the career space, what balance looks like in your life, you will continue to struggle with that as well.
Yeah.
Either work will become your whole life or work will become something you have to do in order to earn a living. And so that's another piece that I think I try to force, but is lacking from that awareness topic just overall.
Yeah. Which goes under that EQ or self-awareness umbrella, is that if you don't know yourself well enough, you're never going to know if your interests are not being met or until you're unfulfilled or bored. And those traits usually come out negative in the workforce, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't know yourself, it could come across as unproductive, uninterested, unengaged, which are not great qualities that any employer or partner or teammate wants to see. But it's not that you don't love your job. It's you could be in the wrong seat at the right company. You could have one issue that you're struggling with, but you just aren't aware enough to get it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, maybe your communication to your earlier point isn't strong enough to articulate what you're thinking and feeling and what that challenge is.
Sure.
So now you just compounded a problem.
Yeah. And listen, then all problems sort of grow in that direction.
Yep.
So if you have a manager in the seat who is, you know, maybe their first time, maybe they haven't developed the skills and they've just been the best one. So now they're the manager and they don't know what intrinsically motivates those people, right? They just think it is money or an office, or and they haven't gotten to know what that looks like for each and every one of their associates.
Yes.
You just continue
making
to feed the funnel.
Yep.
You continue to feed the funnel.
Yeah, you're right. That's a great
point. And then you have turnover and people leave and you know, all the stuff we talk about in a different podcast about management and all of that good stuff. But yeah, it's really important, I think, for and even if you're a career changer, right? So we actually study the career development cycle as part of the class. Like, where are you? Are you sort of evaluating? Have you landed where you want to be, but you're still, you know, not at the level you want to be? Have you reached that level and are a little content? So you either need to find something that's a hobby or a subset that supplements that, or are you ready to make a move? And then cyclically, here we go again. There has to be this level of understanding there's going to be a trade-off anywhere you go.
Always.
Right? So grass isn't always greener is an expression I love to use with my students. But understanding you might have to take a step back from a money standpoint, and can you afford to do that? Have you delineated or thought about what the lifestyle is that you want to lead? Can you afford to be in that industry or have that job and have both?
Yes.
Or are you going to have to scale that back? And so when we talk about master your money, it's a huge component of it, right?
Yes.
But you would be shocked if I have them rank 3 out of 20 trade-offs or non-negotiables, how many actually even have money in that top 3. It is more about balance, flexibility in my schedule, travel.
Yes.
Especially, you know, at this age or level, upward mobility. Growth is really what they want.
Now, is that different from maybe when you first started 8 years ago, or have you noticed that?
It's not as different as when I started in this space 8 years ago. It is 100% different than when I was a graduating finance major, you know,
money
with my bachelor's.
Yeah.
That whole group of my finance class, you know, I was in student investment fund with, every single one of them went to Bank of New York, Merrill Lynch, Morgan, and some are still there doing extremely well.
Yeah.
It was all money motivated. It was, and again, could be geographically where we were, but certainly no one was doing this work with us as business students.
Yeah.
They were saying, you know,
go make it.
Go, exactly.
Make as much, and work as much, right? Those are the jobs where I hear, yeah, they put us up in a hotel because we didn't finish till 10 p.m. and we had to start at 5 a.m.
Yeah. I had a friend who used to get a car service, like at least three nights a week. They'd send her home working for Bank of New York at the time. So
I love that you mentioned trade-offs. Because again, from a career standpoint, I do not think we talk about them enough. And certainly probably not with our children. We don't talk about it enough. So I'm glad to hear that you do bring that up. And it's something I'm going to try to bring up a lot more with my kids. But also with young professionals that I work with, that you know, I believe you can have everything, just maybe not at the same time.
Sure.
And you have to prioritize those wants and needs for yourself.
Yeah.
I can't do that for you.
Yeah.
And you notice a constant comparison. If they're comparing themselves to their friends or to an older sibling or to what their parents maybe did at that age, I notice a lot of comparisons.
You know, all of that. Mm-hmm. And we are fortunate to work with a lot of young people here who are at those crossroads. And as a people manager, I must say this at least once a week. I would be the biggest hypocrite if I didn't tell you as my associate, I love you. I want you to be here. But if I didn't tell you, you need to take stock in that for yourself and understand, do you want an hour and a half commute? Is that worth $10,000 more? Mm-hmm. You might say yes, because you want to have the best handbag and that's just where you're at.
That's where you are right now.
But there are going to be trade-offs. You have to examine at each part in that area. And once you have kids, you have to figure out what
change. Exactly.
Is that flexibility more important? And now I need to scale back from a career standpoint. Yeah. And maybe that means less money. And maybe I need to have trade-offs there, which is where the budget comes into place. I always, always, no matter what, if it's in the curriculum or not, incorporate a budget exercise with every single one of my students. Always incorporate a networking exercise with my students.
Love that.
Who do you know? Mm-hmm. In what buckets? Who haven't you even thought about in years and years and years? That could potentially be a reference for you. That could potentially be a source of referral for you. That could get you an intro. How do you use these real humans to interact with online networking? Because some students think if I just have a LinkedIn, I'm like, you're set it enough. And forget it.
Like everybody will flock.
100%. Yep. So how do I remember who I actually know? And then, you know, we close it all up with having like a really strong portfolio tactically. So resume that's continuously updated. Not like if Elizabeth asks me for my resume tomorrow, I'm up all night. That I've done a good job every 4 or 5 months to make sure I'm adding certain things, making sure they understand what a cover letter needs to look like, making sure that they know what a sheet of references need to look like, making sure they know what a dialogue with a reference should sound like, not just here's a name and some contact information. So lots. It's a semester's worth, if you will, that you really can try to drive home some of those themes with students.
Well, I am grateful for the work that you do. Thank you for all the work that you do. We are up on time, but I know, flies by.
Fast as half hour. We haven't even cackled.
It's not too late, Amelia. It's not too late. But Amelia has taught us as educators, as maybe new managers, as parents, as anybody who's going to start to work with young professionals. It is still our job to teach and educate them. But specifically, Amelia, I heard my takeaways are in the areas of self-awareness, emotional intelligence, and communication.
Absolutely.
Those are the three areas that we want to focus on to help develop these wonderful, wonderful people who are going to be running the world for all of us. So thank you for grooming the future.
I don't know about that. Sometimes I just try not to trip and fall and spill my coffee all over myself.
And get laughed at.
Yeah, exactly. And tell my students, like, if you laugh at my jokes, like, it makes me feel really good. And then
I'm happier when I agree.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks. Thanks for all that.
Well, thank you for all that you do. Thank you for being on the show. It was great to have you.
Yes, this was awesome. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to Master Your Money and Mindset. You can find these episodes on YouTube or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Don't forget to like and subscribe if you enjoyed what you heard. You can follow Barnum Financial Group on LinkedIn and Instagram. Thanks so much.
All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions their respective parent companies or affiliates or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated. Investments or strategies mentioned in this program may not be suitable for you, and you should make your own independent decision regarding them. This material does not take into account your particular investment objectives, financial situation, or needs, and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for you. You should strongly consider seeking advice from your own investment advisor. Securities and investment advisory services offered through qualified registered representatives of MML Investor Services, LLC. Member SIPC, 6 Corporate Drive, Shelton, Connecticut, 06484, telephone number 203-513-6000.